I'd like to welcome you all to the second of the two panel sessions on leading up to our forthcoming summit on moving towards ontology-based standards. Last week we had a view from the ontologists, and this week we're going to focus on the view from the standardizers, and next week Steve is going to pull together the two views into the basic raw material that we're going to pull together on the 6th and 7th of April, or hopefully just in advance of that, so that we can have a session to see how these sorts of technologies can be used to advance the development and exploitation of the standards. What I'd like to do is, the plan for the session, the agenda is that I'm going to go through a couple of basic outlines on the of standardization, just to bring everybody up to the same level, because there are a lot of misconceptions around. So, I've got my, if you open up the first of my slides, please, Peter.
Yes.
And then go, I'm just going to spend a couple of minutes talking about what standards are and perhaps lay a foundation for the other presentations. My second slide really describes what a standard is. It's nothing more than an agreement which is made between a particular community of interest, aerospace industry, a project, a region, the world, to get mutual benefit based on best available knowledge and technology. So standards can be set at any level, and really it's a voluntary process unless you have very clear mandated requirements, as we sometimes have in Europe, directives from the European Commission based on standards, which moves them beyond the voluntary field. If you could move to slide three, please, Peter. The key principles. What we're trying to do is to ensure that there is consensus, taking into account the views of the key players, the stakeholders who have an interest in the standards, users, suppliers of implementations that conform to the standard, and so on. The optimum environment is if you can get a standard that's workable globally, if you, of course, you need to work in that global environment. And then the other key principle from the international organizations is to be driven by the market and make sure that the interested parties are at least offered the opportunity to participate. What that means is that standardizers are not the standards bodies. They're merely administrators. It is organizations, companies, customers, governments who together are standardization. Next slide. Really, any standardization process falls into three steps. First of all, there's getting agreement on what the scope of a standard is going to be and what the business need is. And once you've done that, you can go undertake the technical work, which will define the basic content of the standard, and then you will take that through a formal approval process among the stakeholders. And any standards process, all of which look rather complicated and grand, basically are trying to achieve those three objectives. Those three stages. Thinking about how this might fit into the ontology world, you look at a number of classes of standards. This list is not exhaustive, but starting at the simplest, you've got lists of values for a particular attribute. The classic example of that is two character and three character country codes, or ranks, or academic degrees, or currency codes, or similar such lists. Moving up the list, you have what's really the traditional product-based standards, where you have the attributes of a product defined by its characteristics, which may have permitted values. If you think in terms of a bolt, where you know the diameter, the length, the type of thread, and so on. And there are literally tens of thousands of those standards well established in the marketplace. If you look at nuts, bolts, and washers, the basic set is about 300 standards. all of those have implied relationships between attributes and maybe subject to ontologies. Of course, the joke was made last week about the fact that the great thing about standards is that there's so many to choose from. Part of the reason for that is not taking advantage of common concepts across those standards. Query, can we use ontological principles to simplify that? Moving further up the scale of sophistication, information models, entities, attributes, relationships, many of those are being developed and there is a clear requirement for integration. There's another major class of standards, actually, which are among the best sellers, which are management standards such as ISO 9000 for quality processes in organizations. I have no idea how you might apply an ontology to those, but I'm very pleased if anybody can come up with a sensible and innovative idea. The last slide, slide six, is something that we're going to augment during the meeting. And we'll try and collect issues as we go through. One of the key ones that underpins all this is who's going to do the work? Because if we look at existing standards that already encapsulate knowledge, the work has been done. We tend not to have the teams available for doing further work in those areas. So if ontologies are going to be used to move standards forward to a new and higher level of capability, we need to find somebody to do it. Okay, that I hope's given a reasonable baseline for what's going on. I would invite Matthew West to unmute himself and talk about ontologizing standards and fruit. Matthew.
Hi, Matthew West here. So we're on the opening slide, which just gives the title. So that's ontologizing standards, the low-hanging fruit. And my name's Matthew West. I've a member of both ISO 22184, SC4, and a fairly long time member of the Ontolog community as well now. The thing that I really wanted to do was make sure that we didn't miss the obvious. Sometimes the obvious is a little boring and not quite as exciting as the things that we might prefer to do, but actually if what you want to do is get credibility, then doing the straightforward and simple things is a really good place to start, because you're likely to succeed with the low-hanging fruit, and also that's normally stuff you need to have in place in order to be able to do the more complex stuff. Okay, so next slide please, slide two. So the first problem I wanted to set as a possible area where ontology, computer science ontology could help, is the problem of identification. Howard mentioned this as well with his lists of things. For many common things, there are multiple identifiers for the same standard objects which you get in different systems. And of course this causes problems when you're trying to share between systems. Now, this happens because even with things like units of measure, just about everyone who needs to use units of measure, whilst they might go and read the ISO standard, they actually tend to implement things slightly different. So I actually went and looked in one repository for the Celsius unit of measure. And I found that it was there six times. And in fact, the tough thing was working out which one was actually the right one. And it turned out that my guess was wrong when I actually went and did a little bit of research. So that just illustrates how easy that is in an uncontrolled environment. Now, as far as I can see, the solution to this, and this is something that David Leal, amongst others, has been pushing as well, is the idea of persuading organisations who are authoritative sources to provide the identifiers for those concepts that they define. And we're talking, presumably, about doing this on the web, so one would expect that those would be URIs of some sort. And the kinds of things that would be good for this are country codes, units of measure, currencies, periodic tables, all those kinds of standard things. Company codes as well. But there's quite a lot of reference information and master data that it would be good to make available in this kind of way. Okay, so that's the first problem. Next slide, please. Slide three. Rules and constraints. Now, most standards, as Howard said, they're agreements, but they're agreements about how to do things, and how to do things normally involves obeying some rules. And unfortunately, there's quite a lot of experience in standards that rules are defined in an ambiguous way. Indeed, I'm told that sometimes this is even done deliberately. But this is almost always unhelpful, and certainly when you're talking about standards for information that are supposed to be computer interpretable, this will inevitably lead to problems. Ontologizing the rules so that they are computer interpretable using some form of logic would be a particularly good way of achieving a degree of clarity about this, and should certainly help to reduce the ambiguity that is possible with natural language. So the last slide is slide four, and that is richer ontologies. Again, Howard mentioned information models, which are a significant part of what ISO 2C184 SC4 industrial data developed. And one of the things that we have been facing is that the technology in which we defined our standards, which is a data modeling language called Express, albeit a very competent data modeling language, is no longer the latest technology, and that people are much more keen to use tools like OWL, and that's fine, of course, except that what we need to do then is to move our knowledge into this new environment and understand that it's what we have contained in Express that is valuable rather than that it is written in Express. The other advantage of doing this is that moving into what are generally more powerful languages will also enable us to capture more of the knowledge that is in the standards that we have. Now, there is a problem here, of course, with the resources, as Howard said. So you're probably not going to do this, just for the sake of doing it. You're going to do it as part of what happens as you improve the standards in general. So a new version might have an OWL or some other form. And examples of where this might apply are standards like ISO 15926, for which there already is at least an informal OWL version, ISO 10303, or the product standards. Again, there's certainly the opportunity to move that into the OWL environment. Okay, well, those were the three things that I had, so I guess I will hand on to the next speaker.
Thank you very much, Matthew. I think the key challenge here that you come out with is the requirement, if you define an ontology, to be able to sustain that information long-term and the representation long-term. It's not just something that you can handle in today's tools. It's got to be in... Well, something might replace OWL one day.
Well, absolutely, absolutely right, yes. And understanding that you need to be able to migrate forward through different languages as the capability increases, I think is one of the key capabilities that we need to develop.
Thank you very much. And now we'll move on then directly to David Leal, who's going to talk about some of the work that he's been doing on ontologies in the areas of engineering analysis. David Leal, please.
I've taken this area as an example, and I think that there are a number of things which have cropped up which might be ways in which we take forward some of the things which Matthew was talking about, and also perhaps indicating who is actually going to do it. And one of the things which I've been working in for a number of years is the engineering analysis part of ISO 10303, which is AP209. And it's very powerful and very comprehensive that we've had for 10 years or more, the structural analysis, and now CFD is being added, and the extra capabilities for dealing with structured meshes and all the fancy stuff which CFD people deal with. And so we've got something which is of a very large scope. We've got all the FEA stuff and CFD stuff. This is the definition of the model and the mesh and boundary conditions.
For those who aren't familiar, finite element analysis and computational fluid dynamics.
Yes, thank you. And very mathematical stuff, like how you describe fields and how fields vary through space. Very interesting to those people for whom the initials are very familiar. But then we have essentially the other data which brings the very techie stuff into the product data management area. This is for what state of the equipment are these fields valid? How the states are created via various things which happen to the equipment in terms of state transitions, activities which happen to the equipment item. And then we've got the mesh. It relates to a particular part of the product, but a particular part of the structure, in its particular part, in a particular version. And then we have information saying, well, this prediction of what the stress fields, the temperature fields, this prediction came from a particular analysis activity carried out by particular people using particular tools. So we've got some very techie stuff, and plus some stuff which is very important for the management of the data and for the validation that everything has been done right. If we could go on to the next one, please. Go to the next slide, please. Thank you. The problem is that the standard, although it's very good, hasn't actually met the industry requirement. It's used in some sort of niche applications, but hasn't sort of transformed the engineering analysis activity. And the reason is that the very techie stuff is done very, very well by existing native formats, Abacus databases and Nastran files and all that sort of stuff. But if we can go on to the next one, please. But the problem is that the metadata associated with it is not done well, and the added value of getting the metadata or all the structuring stuff added into the very techie stuff has not been enough to get people to shift to using the standards. And this is because we've been working with the data model technology in Express, which implies you define essentially a complete package of data, and it's an all or nothing thing. You either use the standard as a whole, or you go your own way with the native files. But if we can go on to the next slide, please. But in actual fact, from the point of view of the customer, they think in terms of their results file. That's what they're interested from a techie side. But what they, and a lot of the sort of people who are close to the doing EFI analysis regarding all the control stuff around it as a bit of an overhead. But of course, from the point of view of the managing the data, it's very important. And if you look at this overhead, we've got a file, but then a relationship. So the results file is just following the chain back for a particular describes a particular pressure distribution, which is over a particular surface of a pump within a bearing within a pump in a particular state. And again, the pump is of a particular model, which is a variant in a particular series of designs. So all that information is metadata for the results file. And the thing is that in order to represent it using the standards that we have, you'd have to say, right, the whole lot has to go into a standard format, and then it's dealt with through our information models. What we actually want, which is good for some applications, but for other applications, what we need is standard metadata, so that what is shown in brown can be metadata expressed in a standard vocabulary which describes the results file. And the thing is that all the concepts necessary to produce this metadata are defined in ISO 10303, but are currently locked up within the information models. But as soon as we can get them outside in ontologies, people can use these ontologies to add semantics about their existing files. Go on one slide, please. Yeah. Of course, as soon as we go from immediate analysis to something which is a little bit one back from the direct analysis, the whole lot can go semantic. But if we've got a maximum value, that can be held in the semantic world. We don't need any native formats for that. And an assessment about whether the pump is valid, or its operating state is valid, can then be done entirely through the data with semantic precision. If we can go on again, please. And the other thing is, of course, that getting the metadata around the results file out into ontology enables us to start extending that to give the audit trail this description of the pressure distribution was produced by a particular analysis carried out by a particular person on a particular code. And to make this happen, there's really two bits. We've got to have the ontology for all these links and also the classifications of things as being an analysis activity or being a pressure distribution. And this is an ontology which can be derived from ISO 10303. But we also need essentially a taxonomy of native file formats and analysis codes to provide information about how we handle these native files. And I think, again, that's probably not within the scope of standardization, but equally somebody has to do it. Somebody has to provide essentially a registry of file formats in a particular domain. And one of the things which the NAFEMS CADFE working group is working towards is to create a project to do this. But it isn't necessarily a terribly large project because the thinking is done. But there's two aspects to it. First of all, that we need to extract the key concepts as a sort of Dublin core for engineering analysis. There are not very many of them, but they need to be standardized. And all the definitions are already there, but they need to be available for use outside the 10303 environment. And also there is a question of a registry of file formats and things where NAFEMS as a trade association could play the role to do this. You could the next overhead, please. And again, I think that's what I've already said, and that certainly the NAFEMS is looking at it. And because it's not a huge task compared to the task of creating ISO 10303 in the first place, this is something which other organisations may be able to fund, and perhaps with co-funding from the European Union. So I think that's a particular area where the thinking has been done, but because the concepts are locked up in the information models, we can't use them as metadata for the native file formats, which people actually are using and are going to continue to use whatever we think they should do. And if we could go on to the next slide, which is a slightly different thing, which has come up from the area of life cycle assessment, that the sorts of information necessary to do a life cycle assessment, in this particular figure, we've got, you know, part type XYZ, and we've got the activity of creating it, and the types of inputs and outputs for that. And we need to do a life cycle assessment for that in terms of, for example, CO2 emissions. Well, you need to follow the supply chain back in order to do that life cycle assessment. And the natural technology to use is, for example, if we've got a URI which identifies part type XYZ, and we can dereference the URI to get the shaded graph, we've now taken, you know, you now go one step out, and we have one ton of steel plate, a generic commodity identified by a URI, and again, you could dereference that to go out to the next stage in the supply chain. And again, all the thinking of the relationships necessary to make the about the semantics, let's say, to make this supply chain semantically precise, all that's been done by ISO 10303 and within ISO the 14000 series for life cycle assessment. But neither of them have been thinking of how this would be implemented over the web in terms of going from a graph of information at one level in the supply chain and then accessing the graph of information about the input commodities. And again, I think it's a task where looking at the existing standards and creating ontologies for them are going to make an area where doing that is going to make sort of supply chain analysis over the web possible. It's not more thinking is required, but it's extracting the ontologies from the existing standards to make this possible. So I've taken two areas where I think that they're particular areas where the ontologies needed are not very large, but somebody just needs to take the step of looking at the existing standards and extracting what is needed for a new application. Okay, well, I think I've got to the end.
Well, that was your last slide anyway. Thank you very much, David. I'm just slightly concerned at the grey shadow of Mickey Mouse appearing in the bottom left corner. But there's certainly not a Mickey Mouse approach to what we're trying to achieve. The key points there are that we need to be able to extract the key elements and concepts from our existing knowledge and use those as perhaps smaller and more accessible ontologies for getting access to and referencing the rest of the data. Thank you very much. Now let's move on to our next presenter, one of the working group chairs from CC184SC4, Dr. Jerry Raddick. Jerry, if you'd like to unmute and talk about catalogues, dictionaries, libraries, metadata, and I'm sure the thing that links them all together.
Great. Thank you, Howard. First, I want to augment the list of IT standards. Howard had a list actually this early in his presentation. I hadn't seen his presentation before now, so I had two additions to what Ed Barkmeyer presented last time. Language standards, like the Express Modeling Language, or Pascal Programming Language, for example, and vocabulary standards, which Howard did mention. Vocabulary standards define concepts within a field using terms, definitions, and abbreviations. And traditionally, vocabulary standards and data models have been done by different groups, and they don't talk to each other that much. But I think there's going to be a convergence happening, and ontologies are an important part of this convergence process. And one of the things, one of the key paradigms that we use within SE4 is a mechanism for extending data models. It's all based
slide 3, I think, Jerry, isn't it?
Slide 3. You forgot, you're not seeing my screen. Yeah, slide 3. It's, there's an assumption that standardizing data models is very expensive and slow. So we want to do it as little as possible. Keep the data models small. Keep as much out of them as possible. So how do we fill in the gaps with more richer semantics? It's done by using standardized reference data under the belief that that's developing the standardized reference data is less expensive and also faster. This assumption is based on experience within SE4 using the express, primarily the express modeling language and a particular set of ISO and SE4 processes. I don't think that it's necessarily the case. Ideally, we would be in a world where you could go seamlessly between reference data and data models without even really having to think about which one you're using. Just push a button and translate either way. So I'd like to see us get away from this paradigm, and I hope the ontology community can help with that. Going to slide 4, just want to illustrate what I'm talking about. This is a traditional way of doing things that you find in any data modeling textbook. You start off creating a data model. Let's say you have an entity called valve. Now we want to talk about specific kinds of valves, so we need to specialize that. So we create a subtype called ball valve, a particular kind of valve that has particular properties or attributes. And this is a kind of, a ball valve is a kind of valve. And this, so this would go into the data model. You can model this in UML and Express. But as I said, there's a reluctance to create too deep a hierarchy because of the costs involved and the time involved to standardize. So going to slide 5, the approach that's often used within SE4 is kind of a meta-modeling approach where you have a fairly flat data model that defines the upper-level concepts, like maybe in this case going down to valve. If we want to specialize further, we do it by having a reference data library which defines different kinds of valves, in this case ball valves. And then when we create an instance of valve, we create a link possibly via an identifier, as David Leal talked about, to that entry in the reference data that library or dictionary or parts library that defines the ball valve. That way we can create lots of different specializations of valve without going to the work of extending our data model. And this is, you know, a fairly successful approach. It's used a lot, but it does have some problems. Let's go to the next slide. Before we get into the problems, I just want to give a little example here with some SE4. We have application data models, sometimes called application protocols, and some of them are designed to work with parts libraries, which define standardized parts. Now, these parts libraries can reference dictionaries that define basic concepts, or the application model can reference the dictionary directly. So on the left-hand side, you see the model, and then you instantiate, for an actual design of a product, you'd instantiate that, and you get the green stuff on the right. There's a little error in the upper right box. That shouldn't be application data model. It should be application, instance of a data model or product model that references a particular parts library, and they both reference a particular dictionary. Going to slide 7, this is a concrete example of doing this within some of our standards, ISO 22745 and ISO 29002. These standards cover catalogs and master data. They can be used in conjunction with ISO 10303 STEP, which defines product models. Going to slide 8, SE4 provides products in a lot of different areas. We provide a lot of different standardized data models. We provide not only the models for dictionaries, parts libraries, and reference data, but we also provide instances of those models. In other words, actual dictionaries, part libraries, and reference data libraries. The data models can be in many different modeling languages. We've accumulated over 20 to 25 years of work. It could be in IDEF-1X, Express, UML, just pure entity relationship models. And as someone said earlier, I think David said earlier, there's not a lot of interest from industry in, you know, something works, they figure don't fix it. If it's not broken, don't fix it. So we're kind of stuck with all these different models in these different modeling languages. Vocabulary, we also produce vocabulary standards, and we also have the Express modeling language and some other foundational standards, which form sort of meta models for some of the other models. Going to slide 9, the issues that I see, and this, I'm glad the others went before me. I think I'm just repeating and amplifying what they said. I think one of the things we'd like to see is seamless integration. I know it was said, somebody said on last week's conference call that that's a hard problem and it's not going to happen anytime soon, but that's what we'd like to work for. Now, we're not necessarily talking about automatically seamlessly integrating any two data models or any two standards that we have, but having the tools and techniques so we can integrate where needed. Now, I think last time we were talking mainly about horizontal integration across different application domains, like, say, automobile making and aviation or something. We also have need for vertical integration, application starting integrating between the application and the model, the parts library, dictionary, down to the Express, and possibly even down below that. Seamlessly being able to kind of move data and query data at any of those levels without having to worry about what model it's in or what technology it was developed with. I think that's where Al and more generally ontology languages can help. So can they be used to avoid the need for this heterogeneous representation of concepts? Now, another thing that would be nice is a good definition of ontology that we can all agree on and work with. Migration path for providing existing, we need, as David was saying, you know, we need to keep providing, and I think Howard also, we need to keep providing existing models and existing instances of these models in the current formats, the formats that industry has implemented, including Express models, Part 21, which is a format for physical exchange files, and OWL, and a lot of other things. But we need to be able to seamlessly translate or migrate data, move data between those different representations. And I would envision vendors being able to provide an application server where you can feed data in any of these formats, get it out in any format, because the format is not really what we're interested in. What we're interested in is the content. Okay, now, David talked a little bit about identifiers. That's a big problem, managing identifiers and URIs. If when you have country codes, it's fairly straightforward. There's an ISO standard for country codes, and we can let the committee that defines that standard define a bunch of URIs, and you're done with. But there are a lot of concepts that are more abstract, and no ISO committee may be clearly the right place to go to define the identifier. So as a result, a lot of different committees define identifiers, or people in the industry define identifiers. And or people take a concept that another committee defined, and they change it a little bit, and they slap their own identifier on it. So managing these identifiers and being able to reason about concepts, which ones are really the same, which ones are really different, and if they're different, how are they different? That's a really big problem that I see in the standards world. Another place where ontologies and ontology world can help is just filling in the gaps in some of our application-level standards. Let's say if we don't have a standard for welding, but there's an ontology for welding, maybe we can just harvest that. We have a fast-track process to where if a standard is developed by consensus body outside of SC4, we can quickly convert it into, transpose it into an ISO standard. Some of the other issues that I see that aren't on this slide, we have to worry about though, is computability and efficiency. There's, when you start modeling things at a more and more detailed level, it's great from a theoretical standpoint, but it puts a lot of burden on systems that are receiving data to be able to do anything with them. You know, we get to the point where if you have to run Reasoner for several minutes just to figure out that somebody's sending you a model of a ball bearing, then that's not good. Another issue that was kind of touched on earlier is we're concerned with transactions. We're not just concerned with putting a bunch of knowledge out somewhere in a file or on the internet, whatever, on the semantic web. In our world, first of all, there's a lot of proprietary information, so not all information can be just stuck out on the semantic web. And second of all, for legal reasons, people need to know what they send or what they receive from somebody else, and it has to be very clear and repeatable, and there can't be any opportunity for the sender to repudiate what they sent. So I think there's a lot of practical issues about making that work with semantic web technologies. Another thing I want to touch on is that there's, as also was mentioned earlier, there's a lot of implicit knowledge in our standards in the form of English definitions of things. In fact, you might could observe that if somebody creates a dictionary or parts library, actually perhaps the most interesting information is the part that's not computer processable. For example, if you have parts library has an entry called, let me see here, bearing, duplex ball bearing, for example, there's an English definition that says what are the attributes that makes a duplex ball bearing different from any other kind of ball bearing, any other kind of bearing. And that's very important if you're going to do reasoning, and that's exactly the information that's not in a computer processable form. So to really, I think, make progress in the long run, we have to get all that information that's currently locked up in English text into form like OWL. One interesting note about that, though, Peter Benson, one of our colleagues, had told us a story that he worked on a catalog, reviewed a catalog for a major paint manufacturer, and nowhere in that catalog did the word paint occur, because that's implicit knowledge. Everybody knows that that's what a company makes paint. All their products in their catalog is paint. But if we're going to create an ontology, then clearly that information needs to be made explicit. I'd like to go on to the next slide. I just want to talk a little bit about a project that we did to try to explore some of these ideas. The title of the project was The Integration of Taxonomies Using Ontology Structures. Lehigh University was the prime contractor. CTC, my employer, was a subcontractor. The purpose of this project, going to slide 2, was to relate government commercial item descriptions and taxonomies to supplier capabilities. Go to slide 3. We used the ECMA Open Technical Dictionary, a dictionary of concepts for cataloging that's based on the NATO codification system, which is in use within at least 51 countries around the world as a basis for defining concepts for logistics and supply chain management. So this was converted into the ECMA Open Technical Dictionary, and it's being published in a standard format via ISO 22745, which is one of our SC4 standards. Go to slide 4. As I'm sure you're all aware, keyword-based mapping, that's kind of what a lot of ETL, extract, transform, and load tools kind of do today out of the box, but that's not what we really need, because there's rarely a one-to-one correspondence between concepts in two different catalogs. So deeper analysis is needed, and you need to look at the meaning of the concepts in order to do mapping. And in this project, we explored using the semantic web technologies to do this. Slide 5. Okay, so OWL axioms were used to map each ontology to the EOTDs. The EOTD became the lowest common denominator, the lingua franca, for mapping between these other different catalogs and taxonomies. Just a little example there. Go to slide 6. This shows you how all the ontologies were connected together. EOTD ontology, as you can see, is the hub of everything. And you have all ontologies for various other taxonomies, catalog systems, in blue, and then the mapping ontologies are in green. Slide 7. Challenges that in the real world, the taxonomies are different scope and purpose. They're deep in some areas and shallow in other areas, and they're not all at the same depth in the same areas. It's quite common to find lack of definitions. You have no human readable definition of a concept whatsoever. People are just supposed to know from the title, or it's the kind of thing where, oh, everybody knows what that means, which is great if you're an insider who's worked on that taxonomy for the last 10 years, but not really good for unambiguous semantics. There's poor structuring of subclass, superclass, inconsistent modeling, failures to observe even the rudimentary modeling conventions that exist. Go to slide 8. Here's a little example of this from E-class, where under accumulator, comma battery, you have things like battery charger or battery repair, which are not batteries, but yet they're listed as children of accumulator battery. Go to slide 9. So after creating all these ontologies, we used a DL reasoner to integrate and to check for consistency and do the subsumption, et cetera, to merge the taxonomies, merge two taxonomies at a time. We go to slide 10. So that was kind of the project. I would say it was successful. We demonstrated feasibility of this approach, but a lot of the problems are not with the technology. It's with the material that we have to work with, some of those problems I mentioned earlier. Lack of definitions, poor structure, et cetera. So slide 10 shows you the project team, what each group did. I think that's it for my presentation.
Cherry, thank you very much for the two presentations. I think the key messages I'm bringing out of that are the potential challenge of integration of models, and although you've achieved it, is there something that we can do better from the ontological framework? We need to be able to pull out implicit definitions. We need, as David said, to be able to sort out the identification of the objects that are in the ontology, and we need to be able to do it in realistic time. So thank you very much for that. Let us move on now then to Nicola Figge from EADS, who's going to talk about some work that he's been doing using ontological principles for product lifecycle management. Nicola. You could hit star 3.
Hello?
Yes, you're there.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we
Hello?
Can hear you, please.
Okay, some problem with muting. So I will present you some activities we are doing since a lot of years about usage of STEP, but also to make the links with other languages when we want to deal with software specification, so implementation, and usage in operation. So it will summarize and provide some feedback from research activities performed within EADS first, and also through a thesis that I am working on with Liris, with as a master Parisa Godus. So please, next slide. So here, Howard told me to summarize my first slide, so I put some bullets, and after you have some materials maybe to explain and to provide more feedback about to explain what I produced there. So there were first usage of ontologies in a project called AFNA to try to federate different information bases from different projects or European projects. So the idea was to federate information coming from heterogeneous sources, and I was very, I really enjoyed to use OWL as a language, and I tried to imagine how to use it to deal with application protocols. So a first thing we've done for that was to try to create a semantic graph, so without taking care about reasoning, because reasoning for me was not mature first as the tools produced for that, and also the world is not always logic. So for me, the first thing to interrelate the information and the source of knowledge that are heterogeneous is a sufficient added value to focus on semantic graph and all full. So the idea was to try first to translate and to map express to all, but all full, and then also to try to enrich the model to add some extra information that are within the application protocols and are not within Express itself. So, for example, the unit of functionalities that we can find, for example, in AP214, the conformance classes that allow to put the contextual information about the tools that are implementing application protocols. If you look at AP203 and modular application protocols, it will be conformance options. Also, you can put on the ontology the definitions that are provided inside the document within the ontology, and to take use of it with some application engines or querying engines. And also what could be also very valuable is to formalize the module structure of application protocols to interrelate the schemas and the modules themselves, not with the documents that is I would say paper-based for people, but something for software. So doing that, the idea is that an application protocol can become a knowledge base that can be queried, validated from a logical point of view, displayed with visualization tools, enriched and annotated, etc., etc. The other idea is to make the link with some other initiatives out of ISO, but related with other standardization bodies, making a family of standards that are complementary and interdependent. If you look at PLM services at OMG related to AP214, and the VDA standards providing a formal description of ECR, engineering change request and engineering change order processes, you can see that all of them are using heterogeneous languages. So it's Express, it's UML, it's WSTO, it's XML schema, it's XMI, and so on and so. And when you try to make the links between all these heterogeneous models, it's a kind of nightmare because you have to make it all this endly. And if you look at existing bindings or things like that, most of the time you can see that at the end, automatic translation does not work and you have to make some adaptation by hand, but you have no track on how it's done and it's very difficult to check the currency using any tool. So here's the idea is to try to take advantage of ontology to make kind of federated model, interrelated using annotation that help the people providing the models and the formal standards with ontology to relate heterogeneous domains and representation. After a time, I finally understood a little bit more what means descriptive logic and reasoning, so it took me a lot of time. And looking at the new version of OWL2 and the emerging reasoning engine, now it's becoming more mature, and you have also some other research related to large triple stores for RDF that make it possible now to have million, billions or more of triples that are the basis of all, and make it possible to think about use ontology for manufacturing models, because if you look at KAD computing and so on, if you use only Protégé, you are dead for a little model. But so it's not robust enough for our purpose. And what is happening now is more mature technology, more robust, and making it maybe you can start to think about something that will deal with a large amount of data required for manufacturing. So I reconsider the way of using ontology with descriptive logic, so all DL for descriptive logic, and currently the idea is to take advantage of that, try to formalize the mapping between ARM and RAM in order to make it a logic way and to try to have automatic translation between application protocols using reasoning engine. And here the idea is that you don't have to try to understand how it is described in application protocols, but you formalize it using O, and once it's done, you only use the reasoning engine, and that's all. So if your model is validated and your reasoner is validated, you can publish it in a semantic repository on the web, and to let's use it with, I will say, intelligent agents taking advantage of your presentation in O. One issue there that was discovered also in Athena is, okay, ontology is fine, but it's not all the world. And comparing the different modeling language, which all have different purposes, Express is for data exchange, and it's very focused and simple. XML was initially only for electronic documents, and it was evolving, and through XML schema, it was extended to deal with database exchange. But it's less focused on Express, and it's more complex. But it's really focused on data exchange or EDI. If you look at UML, that also allow to describe formally a semantic, it's really used by people designing software application, and currently you can extend it for domain-specific languages, so it does not make the things very simple. And if you look at ontology web language, it's really focused on, okay, what people call ontology, and someone say, oh, what is an ontology? What is the definition? And I think it's a very difficult question, because if you ask it to all the communities, they have all their own definition. One is a formal description of a domain of knowledge that is consensual, and making it formal, it means that it can be used by, it could be computed by a computer. But the point is that the people working on descriptive logic are saying that Express and application protocols are not ontology, UML is not allowing to describe ontology, and so on. I don't think it's really the case. I really think that they are focused on different usage. And looking at the life cycle of an application and how it is produced, I think also we have to consider the programming languages like Java, the interface description language like IDL for CORBA or WSDL for web services. And also maybe we have also to think about language to model the processes that are always composing services, and services have as input and output information that are typed according information models. So to make this kind of segmentation is something that is not really effective in real life when you try to deal with interoperability. Another point is about a basis for producing frame to ensure currency of formal descriptions of family of standards. So I take the example of AP214, PDTNet, that is message-oriented, PLM services, that is service-oriented, VDA, that is process-oriented. But if you try to look the currency all along this family of standards, it's really a nightmare. And you have a loss of information each time you try to make some transformation between all these models. But they are really interrelated and describing the same business concepts. And it's really difficult to deal with that. Other idea about usage of ontology, making the mapping between Express and all, I made it first with a binding, Express language to all language, and making it only, I discovered that, in fact, as relation is a concept that does not exist in Express, you have a lot of X assignments entities or X why relationship entities within the application protocols are, in fact, are describing relationships. And it's not within the express language that it is expressed. It's at the model level and not at the meta model or at the modeling language that you can capture the semantic of what you are modeling. And it's done away, analyzing AP214, it's never done the same way, and you have a lot of different ways to deal with XY relationship or assignments, and it makes it a little fuzzy to try to really handle a systematic way translation of AP214 in ontology web language, where relation is one of the three core components from a modeling construct. You have individuals, you have relations, and you have classes. And here, the expressivity of express is lower than all for this purpose. In the other direction, if you compare all to UML, you can also discover that all is have a lower expressivity than UML because it does not handle the description of components aggregation. So they are really, focusing on classifications. But if you want something that is more complex and that is very important for manufacturers, when you try to model an aircraft or a car or a product, you have some issue because components and decomposition, the breakdowns, is one of the key tool to describe a product, and you have nothing that is inside the construct of all that is dealing with breakdowns. So the conclusion is that each language to formalize the knowledge, a formal way, is really different and very focused on different for different purposes. And to say, okay, I will replace one language by the other, I think is not always accurate. It depends on what you want to describe. What could be interesting is to have several representation models that can be interrelated and where you can ensure the coherency, the semantic preservation between the different representation. For example, if you take a part, if you model it in Express, it will be an entity. In UML, it will be UML class. In all, it will be an all class. In Java, it will be a Java class. In XML schema, it will be an XML entity. But the user don't care, and in the real world, a part is a part. So all to ensure that the parts described in this different formalization will be the same all over the different representations that are provided. Next slide. So trying to work with the ontology provided by the semantic web community, because you have not only all, you have a lot of competitors, and in the ontology community you have about, I will not say 100 because maybe it's too much, but a lot of different formalism and different logic and different standards to formalize ontology. So you can have descriptive logic, you can have a first level or second level logic, you can have study logic, you have a lot of logic. I discussed with Guy Pierra from an active actor of Pélib, and they are describing their own ontology language called OntoML. And they say, oh, I don't want to use all because all is not suited for the need of Pélib because they don't care about computation and they are very poor when you are dealing with numbers. So when you are using all and descriptive logic, you have very few things about computation. So the computational aspects are not there, especially for literals that can be stringed, numbers and things like that. So we need to also to create equivalence between the different construction of the different languages, and you don't have a strict equivalence of what you can find. You have also an issue for the semantic community about semantic services. There were an initiative with all services, But currently the work is not going on, and you have another competitor, but the working group at W3C is not very active currently. And you have a lot of things developed for service-oriented architecture based on XML, so a syntactic standard. But currently it's really a pity not to have make it semantic. So it means that a lot of legacy system will not be semantic on the web. Other point, breakdown constructs are not available. It's not an initial construct. That is really, I think, a key thing when you are molding products. And for me, it's something missing when you look at ontology web language. And here, probably we need to find a language for describing ontology that are really suited for that. Other example for all, when you make descriptive logic, something can be, a thing can be or an individual or a relationship or a class. And the problem is that when you are modeling a product with product family, with items, with serial numbers, when you have the product as designed with individuals, you need to have description of knowledge where something can be one time considered as a class and sometime considered as an individual. And currently, it's not supported by all descriptive logic. So here is also some constraints that it may be not accurate when you want to model a product. Improvement and extension of formal explicit visual representation language. Okay, when you have an ontology, it's computable. It's not always user-readable, and most of the time, you need to represent it a graphical way. And you have, for example, UML that is graphical. You have Express G that is graphical. And the point is that most of the time, sometimes you have graphical languages that are formal. You have formal representation, textual base that is computable. But some people are only focusing on graphical and some others only on the textual. And when you want to align it, it's a nightmare. So example is, for example, BPMN, that is a graphical language, and you have binding or alignment with XPDL and BPL that are textual. And you see that the conceptual sets described for BPN, XPDL, and BPL are not aligned. So for ontology, sometimes, and for important knowledge, the graphical representation is very important for people, but you need also to have formal language aligned from conceptual point of view with the formal language and without any ambiguity. If not, you can't interpret it the same way, and it's really a mess to ensure coherency between what you see and what is interpreted by machines. And it's particularly important because for complex set of information, if you have it on a textual way, you can't analyze it, you can't understand it. It's too much analytic. If you want people to catch information, you need something graphical. So here is also an issue for ontology, alignment from what I call semantic cartography and semantic formal language. And finally, what I learned here is that it's very difficult to impose one language, and the idea is maybe to select different set of languages for very well-suited purpose, covering all the life cycle of an application supporting a business. And for that, probably you have to address all the phases of life cycle, so you will have formalism for conceptualization, for design, for development, and for operational use, for example, data interchange in operation. And I have really the feeling that if we choose a language and so on, we create some what I will call some silos that will depend on the language you're using to describe your ontology. And I think we have to break these silos because due to the evolution of the way we are dealing with applications that are no more in a V-cycle but are all interrelated, you don't care if you manage it at specification level, design level, operational time and usage. All these things are today interrelated, and the knowledge is everywhere and should be shared all along the life cycle of the application. So from my point, ontology can help not to say we choose one language, but we think about how to interrelate different representation of the same knowledge for a given community, and all of our web-related technology are good candidates because they are opening and they are breaking some, I will say, boundaries between application, between companies for e-business. So I really think that it will impact a lot the future, but I think that we have a lot of things to think about on how to use it. So just to conclude, I will just ask to push the slides very fast for the next slide to give some illustration of what I said, but I will not go in detail. So for the drawback slide, so next one. So here it's a more detail on Athena and what was done in Athena for the semantic graphs. Next slide. And why we didn't use OLDL. After that, it's more details about what we are doing currently, trying to take advantage of descriptive logic. So next slide. So here is something about currency of different representation of the same knowledge. So Express, SUML, XML schema, RDF, OLDL, descriptive logic, SQL, programming language. Here, just the message is, when you have a business concept, the user don't care if it's formalized in Express, UML, XML schema, and so on. And to say I will use such or such language will really depend on what you want to do with the application. Next slide. So for the language mapping, someone database object mapping was talking about impedance mismatch. To compare it with electronic, to say that when you make a transformation, you will lose some energy or information. I will say that currently, from an industrial point of view, looking at what's happening, I will call it impedance mismatch, because we have so many languages, so many formalisms, so many organizations dealing with the same topics, but from different perspectives, that we have some difficulties to have semantic preservation. So I really think that somewhere reflection about what kind of language we're using for which usage is to be handled, and not only at ISO, but also with the other standardization organization like OMG, like W3C, and so on. Because if not, the industry will be lost, and the standards will be very weak. Next slide. So here it's more a picture showing some experimentation doing from going to the to STEP, making transformation in all to have reference data libraries in all and a kind of knowledge base. The same thing to transform it in UML, and from UML, transformation for code that was deployed in an execution platform, an application server. And in this idea, we have the same concept. And from using model-driven architectures and model-driven engineering, the idea is to try to be able to make the information traveling between all the different point of viewpoints and to preserve the semantic between all these viewpoints and for all these activities. Next slide. So here is an example. It's a publication of an application protocol that were translated manually to AP239 modules in all, OLDL. And here the file is published on the web, and I use an application called All. It's All Light, provided by the people who are providing Pilot reasoning engine that is open source. And here, opening the file that is on the web with an application that is not on my PC but on the web also, I can open the ontology, and here it describes me all the structure of the ontology, the definition, but also it's making some inferences. It means that if I put some rules that are descriptive logic rules, it will infer, and automatically it will create and show the deduced, the inferred relationship or categorization or thing like that by applying the rules directly. So here it's an idea of what could be a kind of semantic repository where you can publish a set of standards mixing not only the Express but also the definitions, something like the module structure or thing like that, and to make it available on the web for people but also for software. Next slide.
Okay, if you could arrange to finish in the next couple of minutes, it would be good. We still have a couple more presentations.
And finish. And here it's the same ontology that is queried by a SparkQL Virtuoso. So here it's not anything dealing with reasoning. It's only using SparkQL that is something that queries a graph and also allow you to exploit ontology using some other technology related to RDS. So it's finished. It's just to give some meat around the ideas that were provided on the first couple of slides.
Thank you very much indeed. I think it's an important contribution because you've not been as directly involved in the development of the various standards as others have been, but you're picking up on a range of the technologies and seeing how they can be made to fit together. And I think you've successfully outlined a number of challenges. Now we're going to change the flavour a little bit now, and I'm going to invite our second David Shorter, who runs the European Enterprise Architecture Working Group that corresponds to SC5 Working Group 1, to talk about how to get greater rigour in textual standards, having spent a lot of time on ontological type things. David, if you'd like to unmute and go, please.
Okay. Well, I think just picking up what Howard said, the few slides here really concentrating on the way that we've tried to get a better rigour in what we've been doing. Let's go on to the next slide too, please. Okay, this is a bit of background. Howard introduced the working group that I'm the convener for. The thing about the CEN work is that there has to be a European reason for doing stuff in CEN as distinct from ISO. And more generally, I mean, it could be things like preserving some of the European currency symbols or something like that. But in our area, particularly, it's been to do with establishing a better bridge with the research community and picking up material that's come out of Framework 6 and Framework 7, the European programs. So big projects like Simoso and Athena and Interop and Ideas and so on have all made contributions in various areas. And these are usually extracts or summations of material from project deliverables. So they started out with a particular flavor, and they've been condensed and made available to us in the areas that are relevant. The work that we've actually completed, the second bullet, we've completed some standards on enterprise modeling, particularly the framework on enterprise modeling 19439 and on constructs 19440. This work was substantially completed in 2006, I suppose, with fine tuning ever since. And really, that's the basis of what I'm going to be talking about this evening. We are currently doing some work on requirements for manufacturing enterprise process interoperability. We've got one standard, which is one draft standard, which is going out for ballot at the moment, and we're with a certain amount of difficulty trying to define the scope for the follow-up standard, MEPI 2. What we also, as Howard mentioned, make contributions to and participate in the ISO work, our parallel committee, and many of us are members of that working group as well. And the actual work item there is a reference base for enterprise architectures and models. That's a substantial piece of work which is trying to, or is revising and consolidating two earlier standards. And people may know the work of the Purdue team, Pera and Geram and so on. That is underpinning 15704, and then there's some earlier theoretical work that was done in the ISO working group, which is also now being consolidated. One of the problems there, of course, is getting consistency of vocabulary. Next slide, please. Right. Okay. The way in which we write our standards, and this is from a rather local perspective, this is a SC5 perspective, not SC4. Obviously, the guiding thing is that standards have to provide some constraints if they're going to actually do something useful, if they're going to contribute to the exchange of whatever, information or techniques or whatever. They've got to say, this is in the standard, and it, by implication, this other thing isn't. And the way that that's done in ISO, of course, is to use the ISO directives that have rules about how shall and terms like that are going to be used. If there are no shalls in the standard, it's not normative. I mean, sort of. Anyway, other normative elements that you can have are things like formulae, syntax definition, templates, and flow diagrams. And recently, of course, coming out of SC4 and STEP, there's been some progress, which Howard's more familiar with than I am, on accepting the idea of standards as databases. The ISO rules say that figures are always illustrative, and you have to refer to them as an example. We've had some progress in arguing that where we actually generate a figure by computer from some underlying data structure, those are really like flowcharts, so they don't need redrawing. That helps to cut down on some of the errors. But even so, as I understand it, we cannot refer to those figures as normative elements. And this is a problem, especially if we've been using UML to generate stuff, as I'll talk about in a minute. One interesting question is why is this still the case in ISO and SEN? Why can't we refer to figures as normative things, especially if they've been generated in a particular way? Is it something to do with the tool that we're using, or the lack of rigor of the modeling language? Is it that we can't verify the figures in some way? There's no certification. Is it lack of expertise on our standards makers, or inertia, or whatever? I think that could be an interesting question to explore with sort of ontological insight. Next slide, please. Okay, what we've actually done in our working group, and these are four techniques. Let me just very quickly touch on them. One of the basic ones is actually to use computer-assisted concordance checking. This is all very simple stuff, but it's incredibly useful. You can reduce the synonyms where you're using, within the same standard, two different phrases for essentially the same term, and you can hammer people on the head until you come up with one term. You can also check the usage of the term in a particular context, and you can see whether there are inconsistencies, which you can then resolve. That's very effective, but it's not something that's very pleasant to do in a working group, a big working group meeting, maybe two to three people max. It's incredibly boring for those who aren't actively involved, and it's very hard work. Next technique, concept maps. We've done some work on that. We've been using a tool called CMAP to do that. That's particularly in the ISO SC5WG1 activity in the consolidation and revision of 15704. Where we've been setting out at a rather top level what the particular concepts are that we're concerned with and what the relationships are, and nothing more than that, really. But that can be done collaboratively on the web, and that's offline. That's quite useful. We've also had facilitated sessions. We had a joint meeting of 18451 and the JTC1 SC5 WG42 Systems Engineering Group, and we had an ontology expert, Chris Partridge, who was there as a facilitator and kept pushing the need for better abstractions underneath, better understanding of abstractions and so on. It certainly exposed a lot of issues. What we were trying to do was to get to grips with terms like stakeholder and view and viewpoint and model and concern and how these things related. Because the ISO WG1 group and the ISO WG42 group had very different conceptions of these things, and we were trying to get one related approach. I should mention that 15704 has got a sort of flavour of enterprise engineering, which is a bit analogous to the software engineering ideas behind WG42, or rather systems engineering in WG42, I beg your pardon. But the most effective one, or the one that we've made most use of, is to do conceptual modeling using one single underlying UML model and different views upon that model. This we found to be very useful for greater consistency of relationships between the conceptual elements and the greater consistency of the figures with the normative text and the templates. I'll come on to that in fact, the next slide. Could I have the next slide, please? Okay. So you won't be able to see the figure, but not to worry. This is one of the most complicated views. This is the function view on the enterprise modeling constructs in 19440. There are 14 constructs, and these are, in the figure, you can see there are some orange stroke brownie classes. And then there are some complementary concepts, which are yellow things, which are referred to in the description of those major constructs. So this is a function view of the enterprise modeling construct. And what that means is in this one figure, you've got all the things to do with functionality, behavior, from the enterprise modeling point of view. It means that you can actually double check the relationships between these things, because you label the relationships on the model, and you go back and then check exactly what it says in the text to see that that's correct and consistent. Here we also capture the template, the attributes of the particular constructs, and within the 19440 standard, each construct has a particular template, which is always the same structure, that structure actually varies at different points in the life cycle. In other words, it's, as it were, elaborated with more things as the life cycle progresses. So we also need to maintain the consistency between the templates, and again, modeling in UML enabling us to do this. There are also some other things. We also define behavioral rules as well as structure. So these rules are actually then modeled and defined in extended Backus Now format, that's been very useful. These diagrams for the various constructs are actually in the 19440 international standard, but they are in an annex, just as an informative annex. This is a pity, because in fact the greater rigor is actually in these figures. Next slide, please. Okay, just a specific example of how we went about checking consistency. One of the construct classes is a thing called event, and the way in which we check consistency there was to create a blank diagram within the modeling space using a tool. We added event to the class event to that diagram. Actually, that's interesting, because I've slipped into using UML and object-oriented language, and it's a particular problem, because we're not intending to use UML to create software structures at all. We're purely using it in order to check consistency. It's good having a tool that does lots of nice things for us, but it does bring with it certain baggage, which is quite difficult to shake off. Sorry, that's a parenthetical remark. Anyway, having added event to the diagram, we can use the tool. In fact, this was used using Magic Draw. And we grew the relationships by using the tool to show the nearest related elements, and those were shown automatically, and the relationships were also constructed automatically from the top-level model. These relationships were then manually checked against the text and the templates, then we edited whatever was necessary and iterated. And this was very helpful in really shaking down the structure of 19440, and it led to much greater confidence in what we had. But essentially, it's a single-person activity. You've got to start from a pretty good consensus on what's required. You've got to then model the particular key concepts, and then you've got to do these consistency checks and keep explaining to people what's going on. It's very difficult, in my experience, to do this collaboratively. Next slide, please. So what I think this is the last slide. What could come next? Some of the questions that I have: would it be worthwhile and feasible to develop the UML model for these constructs into some form of, for example, frame-based ontology or whatever? We have this thing at the moment. It's sort of hidden behind the scenes in the standard. Is that just a waste of something, or can we exploit it in some way? Who would it benefit? And which are the users that would benefit? Would industry actually find any useful support for it? And how we are non-ontology specialists, how would we go about that? I understand people use Protégé, but I just heard Nicolas Figuet say that there were some restrictions to that. What would be a sensible way for us to move if we were going towards an ontological structure? If we were successful in doing that, how should the consequent ontology actually be published as, quote, a standard within the CERN ISO directives. And I think that maybe complementary to the ideas of standards as a database, we also ought to try to push, maybe at the strategic technical committee level, the idea that of model-based standards and explicitly addressing the usage of those in the ISO directives for drafting standards. So those are the things that we've done. That's how we've tried to get the formality, or at least some greater rigor and consistency, and some of the questions that I'd like to just expose in this forum. I think that's the last slide, isn't it, Ott? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. I think you've hit on one of the really difficult issues there, which is how to publish this sort of stuff. We've only just been able to drag ISO and IEC screaming forward into the, I'll say, 21st century, to support publication in database format and management in database format. Ontologies could take us further forward on that. Okay, thank you for that. Last but not least, looking at some of the correspondence that's taking place in the chat area, there's quite a lot of alignment with what our third David Price, has got to talk about briefly on the subject of some work that's going on with NIST on the future of the STEP standard, which for Mike Bennett's benefit is ISO TC184 SC4 activity. David, if you'd like to unmute and begin. Thank you.
I'm going to report on an activity that's been going on for the past about 5 months now, off and on in various forms of the, we've called it future step for this presentation. It's actually enterprise integration harvesting step or something like that. That's the formal title. But so go to slide 2, please. The overall project goals are to enable enterprise integration based on an interrelated set of standards for data exchange, for ontologies, for web services, for whatever IT technology happens to be your favorite or whichever kind satisfy your particular needs at the moment. The second major goal is to enable the harvesting of this work that's coming out of the ISO STEP community, that's TC184-SC4, into ontologies, into other widespread modeling languages, for example, or in other words, the object management group, UML languages, family of languages, ontology definition model, metamodel, et cetera, and the model-driven architecture approach, because as several other speakers have mentioned, transformations or mappings between languages, between data models, between information based on models and ontologies, et cetera, is key and critical. And then the final project goal is to see if we can actually get the TC184-SC4 STEP community to perhaps use these more widespread modeling languages in addition to the Express language, perhaps harvesting back improvements that have happened in the object management group or the W3C or elsewhere as ISO standards. That's one approach, or perhaps using the technology inside that community directly. So the next slide, please, number 3. So the near-term goal is to come up with approaches for harvesting these information models and making them available for other purposes besides data exchange. So we're trying to actually do two things. One is produce a series of standard mappings from Express into other languages. As much as possible, they can be standardized. We've got a model of the Express language standardized in the exchange right now. So we have a MOF model of Express. We're testing out various query view transform mapping languages or tools to try and formally standardize mappings from Express to UML and back, Express to OWL and back, perhaps Express to XML schema and back, at least for a set of similar-looking models. There's also activities where, as Jerry Raddick mentioned, about there are external reference data libraries, parts libraries, dictionaries. Some of them are in the OWL language right now, product lifecycle support domain, and in the systems engineering domain, we're using wanting to use OWL directly as this external library of an external taxonomy. So it may also be that we want to be able to blend in the Express schemas with the related external taxonomies to produce an OWL-only ontology that can be fed into a reasoner to do something useful. We also want to, because these things are, in the end, need to be implemented by software developers, provide tools that a software developer uses based on all these models and languages directly to a software developer. So that's the person at the bottom using a UML2 application development tool to develop their engineering application. And then we also want to enable service-oriented architecture, web services, resource-oriented architecture stuff, so that people can integrate their systems using whatever technology they want, either asynchronously or synchronously. So this is the short-term goal, and we've made some progress in all of these. We'll be reporting on a bit next week at the OMG meeting on some of the ontology-related stuff. There's a semantic information days, and then at the next ISO, the next STEP community meeting, which happens in May. Next slide, number 4, just as an example use case, we've done some work to figure out some engineering questions other than simply consistency or validation that description logic reasoners can perform, some engineering questions they can answer. And one simple scenario is if you have a set of requirements based on a common set of properties or a standard set of properties and systems defined using those same properties, it turns out reasoners can actually be used to figure out which systems satisfy which requirements, and so can feed the system A satisfies requirement X information back to an actual systems engineer using, in this little scenario, that SysML is a standard systems modeling language tool that's a profile of UML. So it's the idea that through some of these standards we're working on that are step-related and originally written in Express but mapped into OWL, DL, and then back in through the HAL-DL back step to SysML, we can actually do something useful to a real engineer. And it might be some nice complementary technology to fit into some of these systems modeling tools, systems engineering tools. So that's a use case that we're trying to demonstrate as part of this project. The systems engineering step standard called AP233 is the reference test case, if you will. It's the schema we're going to be used to do this testing and demonstrate some of these concepts. Next slide, slide 5, is sort of the end goal. If all of this really works well, we might be able to go back into the TC-184, SC4 STEP community and change the way we do business there. It might be an approach where some sort of standardized core ontologies and mappings between the core ontologies and other implementation forms or between other implementation and modeling forms, UML or Express, for example, might be at the core. Around that, we have standards for data exchange, service-oriented architectures, mappings into simpler ontologies to support DL reasoning, perhaps. Resource-oriented architectures are basically RESTful web services with based around HTTP URIs and et cetera. And then not forgetting that in the end, we're never going to standardize everything in an ISO community, and we need to build into our approach the ability for industry to add its own extensions or profiles or views or whatever term you want to use. So the goal here would be to enable that to happen by using modeling languages and tools that are readily available, well understood, and not just something that inside the ISO community. For example, inside the UML language, they have a UML profile concept built into the language with the expectation that people can extend the UML language for various purposes. And the systems modeling language, SysML, that I mentioned earlier, is exactly one of those extensions to UML. So finally, the next slide is just about how the Ontology Summit 2009 might help. One is that it's clear from some discussions in the chat room and among people like David Leal, who's been pushing this quite quite well. There's some basics that we really need to have, units being an example, country codes, things like that, things that are shared across all engineering disciplines or many engineering disciplines that we need ontologies for. Second thing is provide guidance to the standards makers. If the end goal that I just described is really our end goal, what is actually doable now? What might be doable in 5 years? How difficult and how easily, or what are the issues with this idea that we need to align ontologies written as OWL or perhaps as Common Logic or whatever, with modeling languages like UML and Express, with sort of implementation languages like XML Schema, with these various oriented architectures around services or resources. We need some ideas from the ontology community about what's possible, how these all might work together, and then finally just to support these overall objectives in the final communique would be something that would be beneficial to the standards makers in the world trying to adopt ontologies or adapt their standards to make the best use of ontologies and the capabilities that they provide. So that's very short. I have a lot more details I can share, but I didn't want to do that today. It seemed like it would be far too detailed. So that's the end of my discussion.
Thank you very much, David, and thanks to all our speakers for giving a very comprehensive view of some of the challenges we've discovered on using ontologies. And I think your final slide, David, is a good summary of a plea for help from the ontologists as to how we might use the technology better. That moves us on then to looking at the questions and answers and any ongoing discussion. So I'd like to invite people to use the chat facility to raise their hands, and I'll call them up as appropriate there. The first one is Steve Ray. Steve, if you'd like to unmute.
Can you all hear me?
Yep, you're there.
Okay. Actually, I was just thinking, carrying on from David's last remarks there, where he talked about these core ontologies, if David had any thoughts on what he would think would be the right core set of ontologies. You know, there's been a lot of talk in the chat there on units. We've got the process specification language, which I would argue is a core ontology for process. What other ideas do you have, David?
That's David Price, then probably David Leal also.
Okay.
For the systems engineering domain, if units, processes are important, it also turns out there are... we're trying to do alignment with some of the OMG work in SysML, so it's things that are already standard. So in a way, it's harvesting some things that exist. But as I said, in engineering applications, the core of everything we do is based on units of measure and properties. I guess properties would be the other obvious case. The little example of the reasoning that you could do with requirements and systems that a DL reasoner can do was property based. The other people like Matthew and David will have different requirements from the oil and gas industry, I would imagine, though.
David Leal, do you want to add
to
the list?
Well, I just want to add one thing, which I think is sort of getting a sort of simple ontology to cover product structure is important. And I think Nicholas said it's very difficult in OWL, and OWL extensions would be needed. It's not quite clear whether that's true, and I think actually nailing that is becoming quite urgent. And I've been doing some work with Henson Graves from the systems engineering community, trying to work out to what extent product structure type things can be done with OWL, and I think it's important to get conclusion on that quite soon.
Okay.
May I add something? That?
Please.
Yes, just to say, when working with related, I had to make misuse of modeling. Visualize the decomposition with Protégé or with other tools. And as it's by the construct, it means that it's very difficult to visualize the composition with the current tools with all. So due to ontology and classification, to be able to visualize it. So I think the reason why it has some constructs.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other questions for the speakers? Any other suggestions as to how we might better use some of the ontological principles that have already been espoused, or is there anything that we've missed that we should be utilizing?
Michael Grieger here.
Yeah.
I have a quick either question and or request. So if it would be really interesting if between now and the face-to-face summit that we collect ideas such as this idea of having a simple ontology of product structure up somewhere on the wiki, but also, again, some of the terms that people would expect to see in such an ontology of product structure at the very minimum, and then maybe perhaps a few little, you know, kind of documentation-style comments on what the intended meanings of those terms would be. The more kind of seeds that we get like that now, hopefully they will kind of already be sprouting by the time the summit comes, and we can really help it grow.
I think some of the contents are already there in the existing standards, but it may well be that from some of Nicola's work that some of that material could be made available, and I'm sure these pages will remain open, so you can add additional material as required.
Well, I guess to use David Price's metaphor of harvesting, I think some of the people today who have been developing these standards and who kind of made the comment about it would be great to have an ontology of product structure, I think they're actually in the best position to say here are the key terms. For an ontology person to go and into those documents would get overwhelmed with detail, whereas the people, I think, on the standard side kind of see where, you know, here are the major terms, or here are the terms that are causing problems, and it just kind of distills out a lot of the key problems that can help just get the ball rolling.
Okay, we'll bear that in mind as an action for the speakers. Thank you. Mike Bennett.
Hi there. You should be able to hear me right now.
Yeah, I've got it.
Great. Okay. It was, I guess, more of a suggestion, but I'd be interested in people's perspectives on it as well. In a lot of the standards communities where you've got XML schema-based standards and UML data model standards and so on, you've got technical people going out and learning about OWL and getting hold of an OWL tool. And, of course, you can quite easily pull in a logical data model into OWL, and what you've got is not an OWL ontology, but a logical data model in OWL. So one thing that I think might be quite helpful to try and put together as part of this summit is some kind of guidelines, development methodology, if you like, similar to a software development type of stack of, you know, conceptual model, logical model, physical model, but which makes a little bit clearer that it's not just, you know, with these different languages that Nicola was talking about, for example, you've got all the different languages with their different expressive power, but it's also important what it is that is being expressed, as well as what is the expressive power of the language. I just wondered what people's thoughts were on that.
Thank you. Any immediate thoughts? Mike Axelrod.
Can I just sort of comment on Mike Bennett's point? I mean, I think, you know, we have reached the conclusion that if you run an express schema through a relatively naive express to OWL converter, what you get out is not necessarily very useful. You're getting essentially an OWL syntax representation of the express schema, which doesn't really contain the semantics that you want. There has to be a person in the loop here to get something out which is useful.
That's
so
right.
You're really saying we need to work a little more in a more sophisticated way to remodel based on what we've agreed and taking advantage of the representation environment.
Mm. I, I think that's right. Sometimes you have to read the words in order to understand what the proper representation is in AL, not just turn the handle and turn express attributes into AL properties.
Well, certainly that's the sort of guidance that would be helpful. Okay.
Yeah, so the thing is, once you can understand it as a different kind of model, then you can visually present it back to business users because you're managing the language interface between the language of the business subject matter expert and the language of the technologist.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I've still got Mike Axelrod on the queue.
Yeah, I managed to unmute. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Thanks.
Okay. I did a star three, but I forgot to press my own mute button on my handset. So. Anyway, I wanted to respond directly to that other comment because I've witnessed it in person. Brought a bunch of enterprise architects to some semantic training a year or so back, and it was very interesting to actually watch different architects from different, I would say, different breeds of architects. You say the data architects actually struggled to think semantically and to build ontologies in the in-class exercise because they were so used to thinking a certain way, you know, from a data architect point of view. And likewise, some of the guys who have more of a harder core software engineering background took to it right away, but they understood things conceptually, but they didn't know the lingo. And so the idea of these sort of guidelines and best practices around how to actually do this stuff, I think is a really good idea.
Okay. I think that's a consistent theme that's coming out and is backed up also by the question on, and how do we publish this stuff in an accessible form? So we've got the complete life cycle of generating in a usable form and being able to publish. Okay. Thanks for that. Jerry Raddick. Jerry.
I just want to second what David was saying. You do have to read the text. Our experience integrating ontologies confirms that. And I think also when you're working, you have standards or systems of standards that are distributed across test models and libraries and dictionaries, it, unwinding all that stuff and converting it into an OWL ontology that makes sense and can actually be reasoned on is also not, it goes well beyond just feeding it into some kind of translator. There's a lot of work that can be done, and I don't know of any way of doing it automatically right now.
But again, what you're suggesting is that those who have the domain knowledge need to, and indeed the representations need some guidance in how to reinterpret that into a form which is more directly usable. Thank you. I think that's again a common theme. Any other points or issues or questions? I think the standardizers have set the ontologists quite a challenge here to help us use some of the capabilities in a useful way, and I think that's something that we will need to look at in the session next week, which Steve is leading, when we can try and see how we pull the requirements and opportunities together and look at how they can actually be exploited. Steve?
I just wanted to bring people's attention that I'm starting to try and capture the ideas that were popping out of today on next week's webpage for the meeting. I also put it up on the chat room. There's a link there. So I invite anyone to add to that. It's a wiki, after all. You can add your own 2 cents under agenda ideas. So that way we can start and hit the ground running next week, try and see if we can start coming to some kind of consensus on which standards or which projects might be good projects. Again, my hope is that by the end of the face-to-face meeting, we will have a good body of people standing behind some short list of ideas which we can then all trot off to our various funding agencies and all and say, look, this is what the world community thinks really needs to happen next, and that's good ammunition. So please take a look at that and participate next week, not to mention the actual meeting, the physical meeting on April 6th and 7th.
That's great. Thank you very much. Peter.
Yes. Along the same line, every year with on the Ontology Summit homepage, we list our co-sponsors. And actually, there's a very minimal requirement in terms of who qualifies as an Ontology Summit co-sponsor. And the definition actually is that co-sponsors are organizations who provide technical or funding support or endorse the purpose of the Ontology Summit. The fact that you're all here, and I assume nobody paid you to be on this, I mean, you're already providing technical and support, and I assume, I mean, contributing extremely useful resources to the Ontology Summit. So if your particular, we need your particular organization or your standards working group to be behind us and to endorse the purpose of this Ontology Summit, I look forward to receiving people sending me names of your working group so that I can list them under the co-sponsors list. I usually would list the organization and then in parentheses one of your names, or maybe you can provide me a range of names that you want to see listed.
Thank you for that, Peter. And with that, sorry we've gone slightly over the 2 hours, but I hope you found it helpful to load the relevant material. I'd encourage everyone to contribute to the wiki page for next week to develop the ideas that we can discuss on that session. With that, I'd like to formally offer my thanks to all of the 6 presenters and the work that they've put in at quite short notice to bring this together. Particular thanks to the European contributors who've stayed up late. It's gone 8:30 in France and 7:30 in the UK. So thanks for staying up and contributing to this. And let's move ourselves forward to the rest of the detail of the summit coming up. You'll find that Peter will load up on the wiki page the transcript of today's session, plus the very interesting set of notes, which you probably haven't all had time to track in detail, of the discussion that's been going on the chat page. And that should be a valuable resource for the meeting we have next week. So unless anybody has any final points, I'd like to draw this session to a close and thank Peter for his usual solid technical support in making it all happen. So thanks to the speakers, thanks to Peter, and look forward to talking to you all in the next couple of weeks.